Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome into the Women in Business Radio Show. I shocked myself then. I started too early again. I tell you what, I thought I was being so cool. I thought I've got it all under control. All the knobs and buttons are going. And then I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll stop the song early. And I got it wrong. There's another word for that, isn't there? I tell you what, whilst I was actually sitting there and humming along and sort of, you know, having a little bit of a bounce, I had an idea for another little section of the show. We could have quote of the week.
I like that.
Quote of the week. Absolutely. So thought for the week.
Thought for the week. Yep.
Thought for the week. Of course, I haven't got any thoughts for the week.
We'll do it next week.
So we'll have to... we'll do it next week. Thought for the week. Just write that down. Hang on a minute. If I don't write it down, then nothing happens. Let me introduce the show. Who have we got in the studio today? I'm Sian Murphy. I host the Women in Business Radio Show, along with my co-host, Adele Martin. Hello.
Hello.
And who have we got with us today? Oh, lovely, lovely, lovely people coming back into the studio. We've got Rebecca Smith, who is the Deputy CEO of Social Enterprise Kent, which is a community interest company, actually not too far away from us in Kent. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi. Nice to be here.
And with her, we have Jess Bartendale, who is the Employability Project Manager. Welcome to the show, Jess.
Thank you. Hi.
Hello there. I'm trying to read this and I can't see very well. I wasn't sure if we were Jess or Jessica, but you're Jess, aren't you?
I'm either. You're either. Generally Jess, I prefer.
this is the Women in Business Radio Show. All right, you don't have to accept either. This is my name.
Answer to
Call
anything.
Me this. Not I'll answer to anything. So, welcome. Now, Social Enterprise Kent we do quite a lot of work with Social Enterprise Kent because you very much support the Women in Business Big Show and Women in Business, social enterprises in general. And so we're not only are we very grateful for all of your support, but you're good fun and you have loads and loads of information, which is really, really happy to share that. So really, so pleased to have you back in the studio. And what are we going to be talking about? Well, we're going to be talking about, in a minute when I shut up, we're going to be talking about setting up a social enterprise. What is a social enterprise? And if you are in the States or if you are worldwide, because so many of our listeners are worldwide, this is really going to be quite general information. It's not going to be focusing down on the law in the UK. It's really going to be some of the decisions and thoughts you need to perhaps be considering if you are thinking, OK, what sort of business do I want? Because a social enterprise is also a business. So it's going to be some of the softer stuff around that and how you can make it work for you. We're also going to be talking about how employers can, I don't want to say take advantage, that's the wrong word, isn't it? It's take advantage of employing people they perhaps may not always consider employing. So maybe people who have been out of employment for a long time, maybe people who have a history of mental health issues, physical issues, all sorts of things where they may not get those opportunities. And why, as employers, what's the benefit to us? Let's come at it from what's in it for me. Why would we as employers want to do this? So we're going to be discussing that because that is Jess's area of speciality as the Employability Project Manager. So, but first of all, we're going to be starting off with some of our regular slots, which of course our guests actually know nothing about.
Just if, keep us on our toes. Yeah,
but if we told them it would be really boring,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Would.
You see, now the sad thing is that I actually do know about them, and yet I haven't prepared anything. So whilst I'm asking all you lot about this, I'm going to be on my phone trying to find the book that I am currently reading at the moment. But I am going to start off with Adele. And for Rebecca and Jess, who know nothing about this at all, we have a weekly slot, which is what book are you reading at the moment? And it can be fiction, not fiction, it can be anything. It doesn't really matter. As businesswomen, I think we spend too much time reading self-help books when we're actually like helped out. We're fine. We don't need any more help. And not enough time reading things that are perhaps just of our general interest. So don't be sitting there thinking for a business book. I tell you what, if you're reading, I don't know, what you think is a daft fiction book at the moment, I tell you what, let's get it out there. Adele, you've got a book, haven't you?
I have. So I've been a little bit distracted with some bits and pieces I'm working on. And within a book club I'm in, they suggested that we just bring back Get Rich, Lucky Bitch, which actually is a book I haven't read. So that's what I have started to read at the moment in the midst of everything else I'm doing. And it's actually, it might be an older book, but it's some good stuff in there.
Jess, are you reading a book at the moment?
I've just finished a Ben Fogle book, which...
I feel like I should know that.
I'm racking my brain to think of the title of it, but it's about basically sort of being inspired. He's great, and I sort of love reading about his journeys around the world and the people that he's met. So, yeah, that's what I'm just finishing at the moment.
So dipping in for a little bit of sort of fun and inspiration with Ben Fogle.
What do you mean?
Well, it's not too heavy, is it?
Yeah, no, that's right. No, yeah. You sort of follow him around the Atlantic and he falls in the sea and, you know, it's how he's rescued. Like, it's a lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah, all right, we'll take that bit out of it.
Inspirational, absolutely.
I would hope he finds it fun, otherwise...
Well, he keeps going back for more,
well, you know,
he obviously does, yeah.
Rebecca, what are you reading?
I am reading Holly Willoughby's new book. I also can't remember the name of it, but she turned 40 and kind of had a bit of a life moment where she thought, oh, I'm not as happy as I used to be, and I need to do something about that. So she kind of talks about her discovery of what she's been through and all the kinds of things that she's tried, like yoga and meditation and gong therapy with kind of crystal jars and things like this, all this kind of stuff that I quite like to hear about. And I've also turned 40, okay? It was a few years ago now, but I'm in a similar kind of relationship with kids growing, with kids growing up and, well, young kids still, but yeah. So it's been really fun. I'm enjoying reading it.
I can just tell you what the secret is. Yeah. Do you want to know? It's wine, cheese and crisps.
She does talk about healthy eating a lot, actually, Sian.
She does mention that, wine a bit. That is wine, cheese and crisps. That is healthy eating. Yeah. All right, I think if it makes you happy, it's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're sitting there grimacing as you chomp your way through another plate of alfalfa.
That's not fun at all.
No, it's not. I think you need to eat and drink what you want to eat and drink. My book of the week. I've got it here. It is, this is really interesting actually. It's called NeuroWisdom. It's the new brain science of money, happiness and success. It's by Mark Robert Waldom and Chris Manning, Dr. Chris Manning. It just sort of explains the, I don't know, the relationship dynamic between wealth, success and happiness. And it's a really interesting take. And it's also got some really good tips and tools in there for actually sort of calming yourself down a bit. Once more, it's, you know, it mentions sort of mindfulness and it's got some ideas for goal setting and that sort of thing. If you have problems setting goals, which you might guess I do, I have a lot of trouble setting goals, I just get up and run. This is quite good. It's quite good. So it's quite an easy read, but there are some exercises. I hate exercises. I always think they're really good. I love a book with exercises. I just don't like doing them. But do these. Do them at the end of every chapter. So it's really good. Right, moving on. Tool of the week. So tool of the week, it's not it's not what you think. And I can see by the look on your face, it's not what
I think of a couple.
We do have a few. We don't mention those. We're done with that. We've moved past them. It's not that.
Okay.
It could be anything. It could be an app. It could be a website. It could be something like Excel or Word. It doesn't really matter. actually, a tool, a thing that you use that helps you or your business or your day, or it doesn't really matter. If it helps you in some way, it's useful. I do hope you've got it. It's quite difficult for us, isn't it? Keep coming up with a different tool each week. Have you got a tool this week?
Well, for the first time in a long time, this is not a tech tool. And the reason it's not a tech tool, I have been very heavily involved in some tech issues this week. So my tool is to step back and look. Because sometimes you can be so busy trying to solve what you're doing. You know, I had software open, tech things open, and I just sat back and just thought, I'm going to stop and think. Mm. So that, to be honest, that was the biggest tool I've used. And I kept stepping back because all the time you're trying to solve the problems, I was just too far in it. So for me, I just made that time to take a step back. And it wasn't about calm or meditation. It literally was step back and look at the problem I'm trying to fix and just keep stepping back. And the more I step back, actually, I found the solution, because sometimes I can keep on going and end up spending more time in it. So I just kept stepping back from
it. Okay, I'm going to ask a question. All right. How do you step back? Expand on that a little more, because it's the sort of thing that we hear people say, and I say all the time, oh yeah, no, I'll just step back. How do you step back? How do you step back?
I actually, the way I do it, I step back out of the room. So I physically...
So you leave.
I leave the room. Don't laugh, I'm going to put the kettle on, because there's nothing like having a cuppa in your hand. And then I come back in the room, but I come back in the room with that tea in my hand. It's probably that, again, subliminal, the fact that I've got my tea, and I sat back and thought, now I'm going to look at it as Adele, the consultant, rather than Adele, the problem owner and the business owner. But I can't do it unless I physically leave the room. And then I grab a cup of tea and then I go back in and I look at it with my consultancy hat on. Otherwise, I'd never leave the room. I would look like a mad woman.
You just sit there.
I would.
I leave the room, but I don't come back. I don't mean not ever, but I'll pick up my stuff. I'll pick up my notebook. I have a remarkable notebook that I use. I'll take that and my laptop and I'll go to a cafe. And I find that a change of energy, a change of place gives me a different perspective. Mm. And, you know, especially if I've got to drive to the cafe.
Yeah.
Just that, going to a totally different place and actually starting again almost. Mm. It sort of draws a line, stops worrying, start again.
Yeah, I've even been known, don't laugh, to go and actually change my sweatshirit. Just something.
It's changing your anchors,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's changing
your stuff.
I did.
Super. So I really like that. I think that's sometimes we get almost like on a slide of, you know, it's like we're at the top of a ski slope and we launch ourselves off and we can't seem to stop. Mm. And that's a really good way. You need to stop off at, what do they call those things, halfway down? Where you have snaps. You need to swerve over into the bar.
You need to swerve over
into the bar, have some schnapps, have a little bit of hot toddy or whatever,
get back on,
and stop doing that for a while before you get back on.
Definitely.
Jess, have you got a tool?
I think my tool of the week is Canva. I'm really interested in bringing to life case studies of all of the people that we're working with. We've supported hundreds and hundreds of job seekers going into employment, but actually Canva enables us to kind of bring that to life a little bit. So it really focuses the mind in terms of making the case studies kind of short and catchy and attractive, but also sort of putting some imagery with it, and then actually having a platform from which you can kind of share to the outside world, really.
I think that's a really interesting take on Canva as well, because I think we hear about it quite a lot in terms of putting together Facebook posts, Twitter posts, posts upon
which we
Instagram.
Use it for as well, but
and I think we should explain that Canva is designed to be used. It's a tool that helps you create images, slides, presentations, leaflets, posters, all sorts of anything that's sort of image based, but without you being a graphic designer.
That's what I need.
That's what a lot of us need. So it's really, I really like that take on how you're using it to create something a little bit different as a case study. Mm. So what do you, when you create the case study on Canva, are you creating an image that is perhaps illustrating the rest of the words, so you're putting it onto another document, or are you creating perhaps a presentation or a poster or a complete PDF document? What are you doing?
Mainly just the image, really. And I don't even, I mean, if we've got an image that relates directly to that case study, then brilliant, and we would definitely use it. But I just think having an image just lifts a whole case study, even if it isn't actually directly linked to the image. And then we'd have the text next to it, but you're kind of catching people with the image and then drawing them across to the text, and then they kind of are finding out about all the amazing stuff that, you know, individuals have worked on, really.
So are you creating a complete case study on Canva along with the words, or are you exporting it and putting it onto a document? Are you exporting the image and putting it onto a document? Is it a bit of both?
It's kind of a mix. I mean, I think... Yeah, I think it kind of goes both ways, really, actually.
I'm sort of drilling down into it and being a little bit pedantic, because I think case studies is sometimes the sort of thing that we tend to forget about. Sometimes we can get really sort of wrapped up in testimonials and Facebook posts and all of that sort of thing. And we forget that actually a case study is a really soft way of showing people what you do. And at the same time, it can be, especially if you're working with other businesses, so if you're working business to business and the case study is around another business, it's also showcasing what that business is doing. So they're going to be quite happy for you to be doing a case study about them as well. It's almost, it's a bit of a win-win situation, isn't it?
Yeah, and from an individual perspective as well, it's enabling people to have a voice. So they kind of, they own the case study, they shape it, and it's quite empowering as well.
Yeah, so even if it's not a business that you're working with, if it's somebody who is perhaps looking for employment, which is what you do, I love that. So do you involve them in the production of the case study?
And very much, very much. It's in their voice, they own it, and then we kind of format it quite often using Canva, and then we'll sort of share it back with them, and they're like, wow, that's me, that's amazing, you know. So
that's a super super tip and idea, isn't it? If you are working business to business, I think it's an easier sell, isn't it? I want to create a case study to show how we work together, and we're going to be promoting your business. I think it's a little bit of a harder sell when you're working with a consumer, somebody who isn't a business and may perhaps not want their stuff, or they may not know how to talk about themselves. Mm. So you're helping them. So you involve them. They're very much involved in the process. You're helping them with that. Yeah, various. Yeah, 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 it's all right, sorry, I'm going a bit, sounds gone a little bit funny, got absolutely no idea why, but never mind, we'll just carry on. It could be I pressed the wrong button. So just the key to it is involving people. Yes, absolutely, getting them involved, getting them part of it, and then in the production and it getting out and the circulation and all of that sort of thing.
Yep, super. Have you got a tool, Rebecca? I do, I do. So
similarly, we use Trello for our project management, I suppose. So we work on a couple of projects. It's a great way of linking organisations and people together on one single project board. For example, and actually, I mean, it's a free tool too, which is always good. So it's Trello, T-R-E-L-L-O, and just online. And I've started using it as my to-do list. So I have different kind of boards. I've got to do today, and then I've got a next week one. You can set how a due date for it if you want to involve other people. I put them into different kind of categories, and then most of all, I have my to done or done pile. So not just the to do, but got it all done and completed. And sometimes I look back on that and think, wow, I did actually achieve a lot this week, because you can get a bit involved with what's still to come and stop to reflect on what you have actually achieved. So I love Trello. It's really helpful.
It's a really good collaborative tool as well, isn't it, Trello? And there are free elements to it and paid elements.
Yeah.
And I think it's brilliant, because I use Trello, actually. I use Trello to put together the images and text for my exhibitors.
Yeah, perfect.
And that means also my team has access to them.
Yeah.
But we only use the free version, sorry, Trello.
Yeah, we only use the free version too, to be honest. But, you know, it's the functionality for the free version is great, and it's actually enough for what we need. But, yeah, I love the collaboration side of it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, if you're just wondering, I'm a little bit distracted. I am actually sort of paying attention. Something's happened to the microphones, so I'm just checking that we are still on air. What are you pointing at?
I can see the green blobs, so that's technical language.
That's all right. If you talk, we can see the green blobs.
If you're talking to the mic, I'll stop.
Okay, it looks like we are working. I don't know. I think something's happened to my headphones. I'll tell you what, I'm always doing something. I'm always pressing the wrong button. I'll tell you what, let's go and play a record while we try and just get this sorted out, shall we? We'll be back in a mo.
Welcome to the Women in Business radio show with Sian Murphy, connecting women in business around the globe.
Hello and welcome back into the Women in Business radio show studio. I think we've solved our technical issues, but we are going to carry on regardless. So we're back in the studio. We've got Rebecca Smith, who is the Deputy CEO of Social Enterprise Kent. With her, we have Jess Bartendale, who is the Employability Project Manager. My co-host, Adele, she's just outside of the studio, actually. She's just stepped outside, and we're going to be getting back on with the conversation. So we have done books, we have done tools, and now we are going to do... Are you coming back into the studio? Come back in here. Come back in here. Come back in. Honestly. Oh, I'll tell you what, you can't get the start.
You are, but you're a little bit tinny.
Sit down. I'm a little bit tinny, apparently. Never mind, I'll tell you what. It all adds to the interest. So, we're going to come back into what have we learnt this week. And I needed to get Adele back into the studio because I don't know what I've learnt this week. And I'm hoping she does. What have you learnt this week?
So, I had the pleasure of being on a global networking women's meeting, and we were talking about all things business and stuff. What I realised is we actually worked out we had women in every key part of the world, and we had the same challenges. So for me, and then we was able to talk through some of the challenges we faced in business, how we're coming out into 22 and the lockdown. And I just thought to myself, do you know, what I've learned is I haven't spent enough time, you know, networking and working with women across the globe. It was so good to get a different perspective, but also reassuring in a funny way that we all had the same challenges. It was really great. I come off that half an hour of a Zoom session with women in some key places around the world, and it just thought, yeah, you know, you're not on your own. And to me, that's one thing I learned, that probably I haven't sort of stepped into that for a while after being all Zoomed out, was what I learned.
I like that. Jess, have you learned anything this week?
This week I've been out and about quite a lot, and whilst Zoom and Teams have been amazing, the value of what you can do with a cup of tea and the connections you can make and that face-to-face interaction. And I think we all knew it before, but it's just been lovely and, you know, a really nice approach to how to, you know, very refreshing to be going back to that sort of face-to-face working, cup of tea and building those relationships.
Did you want to say something else?
No. I was saying, I was laughing because you're right. One minute you can go from a global conversation, and I did that. I went out and met somebody for a coffee, and I did that within an hour of my diary. And so for me, I think we're bringing together both worlds, and that's what I like.
Absolutely, yeah.
Me too. Rebecca, what have you learned this week?
Slightly different to you guys so far, but I learned who Mel Robbins was. I've never heard of this lady.
I know.
Apparently, she's pretty famous.
I know.
She's American.
She did quite a lot of stuff. Yeah. I feel like I should know her.
So this week I learned who Mel Robbins was, but more importantly, what she talks about. And one of the things that she talks about is high-fiving yourself in the mirror. And it sounds a bit naff, doesn't it?
No, but nobody will see, will they?
But this is it. So she says the power of a high five and high-fiving yourself. So, you know, you remember as a kid getting high-fived when you've done something really well, or people high-fiving, or even just raising your hand, so cheering and raising your hand. And she says that we need to be a bit more... building ourselves up instead of kind of tearing ourselves down. She kind of went through a fairly severe depression, and she just did this once off their own, you know, just randomly. And then she said she felt instantly better. So she says that you need to say clean your teeth, make it a habit. So you clean your teeth in the morning, and she says hopefully everybody's cleaning their teeth, which and then you put your toothbrush down on the side, and then you immediately high five yourself in the mirror and set an intention for the day. And I just love that. I'm Australian, so we love a sporting analogy. And I keep thinking about all the sporting things, but just kind of bigging yourself up and cheering for yourself as well as you would do for a colleague or a friend or your family member.
Yes, we don't do enough of that, do we?
No.
And we tend to end up, I don't know, almost beating. Sometimes even if we're not beating ourselves up, we're not congratulating ourselves.
Yeah, especially
stuff that we have. We're not acknowledging stuff that we've, yeah, we've done well.
Especially us women, I think we're our own worst enemies at times. You know, we're very good at being critical of ourselves, but actually. We never say the stuff that we say to ourselves to a friend. So I think that's quite interesting. Mm.
I've learnt about problems, actually, and about spending time working out what an actual problem is rather than just making an assumption about what I think a problem is and trying to solve it when I haven't actually thought about it. And I'm a great one at doing this for myself, but I'm going to tell this in the context, I'm going to explain this in the context of somebody else, actually. Not myself, because I can't think of one that relates directly to me. It's just that this particular experience reminded me that I've got some challenges at the moment, and I'm making assumptions about A, what that problem is, and B, what I'm going to do about it. And then I came across this, and I thought, actually, let's take a step back. Let's actually really think about what this is. So it was a lady who wanted to create a new habit to sit down and write her book, but she didn't have enough time to write the book. And then when sort of chatting to her and thinking about it, the problem was not a lack of discipline to sit down and write the book, because that was the problem she was trying to solve, was to create a new habit to build in the discipline to sit down to write the book. That wasn't actually the problem. The problem was she didn't know where to start. She didn't know where to start to write the book. She didn't have the first steps, because you can't just sit down and write a book.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Not a good book, and not a meaty book. You can't just sit down and write it and just carry on and on forever and ever. You have to have some sort of plan. And that was the problem. Not lack of discipline, lack of outline, lack of structure on how to actually do it. And so that's sort of what I learned. I've got some challenges at the moment about not having enough time to speak to people that need to book into events, that need to go to the radio show and all that sort of thing. But is the problem actually lack of time? I suspect it isn't, and that's the problem I'm trying to solve. So I'm going to stop trying to solve the problem of lack of time and actually sit down and go, what actually here is the problem? So that's what I've learned this week.
Yeah, brilliant.
Work out what your problem is. Okay, now I have had an idea. I had an idea, but we're not ready for it. So the idea is the quote of the week. Now, I don't have one. I've got loads and loads of cards. I can't think of one. A blank photo. Oh, no. Adele's got one. Look. Okay, I just thought something that resonated, a quote for the week, something that you looked at and you thought, actually, do you know, that really works for me this week. What have you got?
So for me... Literally, I was sharing it yesterday, so this is why I'm laughing. So somebody said to me, oh, this is getting easier. I said, no, you're getting stronger. So the way I look at it, I've got quotes in something that I'm working on. So I just said to her, you may think it's getting easier, but you're actually getting stronger. And that was my quote that I shared with my group yesterday.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Because we do. We always. We assume that it's the same thing that Rebecca was just talking about. No, and don't give ourselves the recognition for actually getting better. We assume that something outside of us has got easier.
And I said to this person, no. She said to me, have you changed it to make it easier? I said, no. Really? I said, no. And I said, as a group, you've all got stronger. And they went, oh, we just thought you'd made it easier. I said, no. And they all, but exactly, they looked back and said, actually, yeah, we have got stronger. But it's exactly what you said. Your default position is somebody has made it easier for you. And I said, no, you've got stronger.
I like that. Let's go with that. And perhaps next week we'll actually have some quotes.
Do you know, I've got them on Canva. I'll bring my laptop. We can live stream them. I have actually got a quote board on Canva that I have as a backdrop.
We'll just do that. We'll just read those out.
Yeah, we'll.
That'll be fine. Easy show. Right, let's get down to some meatier stuff here. Okay, so Social Enterprise Kent, it is a community interest company that helps other social enterprises. And the first thing I want to do, without getting too sort of British UK stuff, let's just talk about
social enterprises,
What they, look, my microphone's back. I bashed it with my pen.
I'll tell you what, we've got
all mod cons here. So we're going to talk about social enterprises, community interest companies, charities, not-for-profits. Yeah. Are there any more other terms that sort of could fall into that?
So here in the UK, we've got charitable incorporated organisations and loads of different legal entities. So, social businesses, I suppose, is another term that's
okay. So if we put it under the social businesses thing, I think that there are some things that we do in the UK that are going to be... that will translate to other countries, such as obligations, what it means to be running a sort of social enterprise, a social business, and how that's different to, we'll call it a normal business, or being self-employed.
Yeah.
And perhaps dispel some of the myths, because I know one of the things that you're quite hot on, Rebecca, is that profit isn't a dirty word. Because
yeah.
I think some people think as soon as they set up as a charity or they become a charitable enterprise, that actually nobody can get paid, nobody earns any money, nothing happens, and everything's for the, you can't look after yourself, it's for the good of everybody else. But it isn't actually like that, is it?
No, I mean, we talk about the triple bottom line a lot in social enterprises and charities. So it's looking at the people side of things and helping people. It's helping the planet. So people, planet, and profit is the third, and they have that symbiotic relationship. And in my mind, I'm thinking of a Venn diagram. They're all kind of meeting in the middle. But profit is definitely not a dirty word. It's the more money that you can help to generate as part of your social enterprises or your charity, the more you can do for your community. And there's slightly different rules here in terms of social enterprises and charities in terms of that profit. But for the most part, the general rule is that it's what you do with that profit that counts. It's, if you're a social entrepreneur, you're not necessarily going to go out and buy yourself a Lamborghini or something. If you've just earned a lot of money, you'll invest that money back into the community or the social cause or whomever the community that you're looking after.
But you still have... what should we say? A market. You can still have a market salary. If you're running a charity, and this is one of the myths that I come across quite a lot, is that if you set up a charity or a community interest company or a social enterprise, you sort of have to live on nothing, or you don't take anything out of that business. You don't have any salary or any expenses or anything, and that every single penny that comes in has to go towards helping the community. But of course, you need to be paid for
Absolutely.
What you're doing.
You can't burn out, because I think it has to be sustainable both for yourself and for the organisation. So if you're not paying yourself, then you don't pay the mortgage or whatever kind of financial outgoings that you inevitably have, as we all do. And then you'll be focusing on that, not on the social enterprise or the charity. And as you start a new business, it's for any new business, really, there'll be an element for the first year or so where you may not be paying yourself market rate as you build and grow and do all the things that you need to do in those early days. But that's where certainly you should be aiming to, is to pay yourself that market rate. And I'm not going to lie, social enterprise and charitable wages aren't as good generally as the private sector. Because there's other reasons that we work and do what we do within those social enterprises and charities. So this is like a word bingo. How many times can I say the word social enterprise and charity in one kind of section? I think we also do it because we want to help people, or we want to help a cause. It might be the environment or whatever that is. It's not just about the money. Certainly, I find, because I work with a lot of third sector or voluntary community social enterprise organisations, it's about that wider thing. We have a lot of flexibility generally in how we in the benefits and that side of things, as well as the wage.
So let's look at some of the reasons why you might set up a social enterprise. So, for instance, I was talking to somebody this week who was really very, very frustrated because they had what they thought was a really good business idea. And it was about helping people. The problem was the people it was going to help didn't have the money to pay for it.
Yeah.
And So to me, I'm not saying it should automatically become a social enterprise, but it looked like if you couldn't bring in the funding from outside, if you couldn't get a business loan, if you couldn't invest in it yourself, and the people can't afford to pay for it, then perhaps one of the things that you need to look for is some funding through social enterprise, and that perhaps that might be a route that she ought to look at. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think, just going back slightly, so the main difference between charities and social enterprises is how you make your money. So charities focus a lot on that traditional tin rattling, people raising funds through events, but also grants. So applying to a national organisation or a funding body to get some funding in. Whereas the difference between that and social enterprise is social enterprise trade as well as have some of those grants. So there's a bit more flexibility for social enterprises.
Yes, I think I used the wrong word there. I was putting the whole thing together as like a charity and a social enterprise.
Fine.
Okay.
Yeah, but for your friend, even if you're a social enterprise and you're starting out, there are lots of organisations that you can go to for that initial grant to start out. Unlimited is a really good one here in the UK, but check out startup grants to see what is going on in what kind of support you can get. And sometimes they also come with a mentor, so you get some funding, but that business support, which is really important.
So let's look at one of the advantages of setting up as a charity, community interest company, sort of social enterprise, not-for-profit. I think one of the big ones is potentially it does open up additional funding streams for you, doesn't it? So can you just explain a little bit about how that might work?
Yeah, this is a tricky one because I think I'm slightly cynical after working in this sector for 15 years or so. But a lot of people set up as a social enterprise because of that. Rather than thinking about the fact that they're trying to support a person or an organisation, it has to be a social purpose. It's not just because you think you might be able to get more funding. But yes, you definitely can access more funding. And these days, the CICs, which is a community interest company, it's a relatively new business legal entity. And grant funders are now recognising that as a legitimate social business. So, 15 years ago, or 10 years ago, I should say, CICs really couldn't apply for funding in their own right, and it would always go to charities. And we still have that. Like, we were just talking before off air about the Lloyds Foundation, and they only fund charities, so they don't fund social enterprises at the moment. So, there's still a little bit of that old fashioned approach, but. There are lots and lots of organisations that will help.
So potentially it will open doors for you, funding doors, but the bedrock of what you're doing must be supporting a community.
Yeah, and that community doesn't necessarily have to be people. It could be animals or the environment or anything.
Yeah, so then it just needs to be something
of some sort.
Some benefit outside of the outside of you and the organisation that you're setting up. So it's sort of different to niching down as a business.
Definitely.
So let's come to Jess. Jess, now you're working specifically with, you are the employability project manager.
Just
explain a little bit about what your role is.
So Social Enterprise Kent delivers three employability projects, and all of the provision that we offer is supporting people with additional barriers and challenges to going into employment, accessing the labour market or going into training. So what we do is we work with job centres, healthcare professionals, we take self-referrals, we go to community centres, libraries, to encourage people to move closer to the labour market. So what we really focus on is building up people's kind of confidence, motivation, pre-work skills, which can kind of be anything from obviously the CVs, cover letters, all the basics that you'd expect to looking at their whole sort of holistic situation, which is what they therefore need to overcome in order to go into work and stay in work as well.
So let's look at it, because this is, this is about women in business. So people listening in are primarily in business and looking to employ. What's the benefit to an employer to employing somebody who may have additional challenges, who perhaps has had these barriers to work, why would I bother?
I think it's opening up to your business to as many people as possible, to which would therefore open up the skill set. So you don't want to have just by saying I only want to employ, or even subliminally saying, giving out the message, I only want to employ kind of white British able-bodied people, because you're then only going to be accessing a very small percentage of the population. So the more people that you can open up your business to then come on board, the better and the more broad the skill set and the diversity within your business. So you're creating a more diverse workforce, it's a broad skill set. And it's just going to be open to more people.
So it just gives you a better business, actually, doesn't it? It gives you different opinions and different approaches in your business, because I think if we're not careful, we can become very blinkered.
I think we naturally
of what the rest of the world is like, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we naturally want to employ people like ourselves. So what we're trying to do is kind of challenge.
That'd be scary for me. I don't think so.
Maybe not in all cases.
No, actually, I don't want to employ people. What would that look like?
I think that's the natural bias, though, is that we do generally want to employ people like ourselves, because that's the model that we see working. And so it's sort of challenging people's perceptions and idea of what would make up a good business.
Yes. Okay, so this is sort of a little bit of a practical thing. So say I am, faced with, but I have CVs, I have applications, and I have people in front of me who don't fit into the, average mould of employee or good employee. How do I assess how they're going to fit in? And how I'm going to manage that situation? And how am I going to deal with it if I have to actually, perhaps if it's not working, if I have to let them go? Because that's not easy. You know, that can be quite upsetting for both parties. Is there an additional risk? Sorry, there were so many questions in there. Do you know which one to answer?
I think if we sort of take a step back from that and look at the recruitment process in the first point, you want to invite as many people or welcome as many potential employees to your business as possible, because then you want to have the maximum number of good CVs. So the first bit is getting your job application right, your job description right. And we want to do that by making sure that we're not demonstrating our hidden biases. We're not allowing those to come out. So we would encourage businesses to have a more sort of neutral approach, and not necessarily having names, age, that side of things. That could be blanked out before it got to the decision maker. So then you're just looking at the skill set on the CV. And then the people that you interview, you're doing it based on skills rather than knowledge about their age or their ethnic background or anything like that.
I think we all have a bias, don't we? You know, we might think we don't. We may not want to, but we do.
We do, yeah.
One of the things that I did when I was recruiting recently was I took off the need for any qualifications at all. Says I've got so many qualifications, I don't know, it's embarrassing, actually. But so you'd think I would be quite qualification driven. But I just took those off, because actually it didn't matter whether you have A level. Am I showing my age now? Does anybody even it's like advanced level exams or degrees or masters. It doesn't matter, because that doesn't, you know, somebody who's dyslexic, for instance, can have a superb brain and really no formal qualifications. So I just took off that need, because it didn't matter. And people were a bit, ooh, okay. But it worked for me.
Oh, that's good.
So, yes, okay. How do you deal with any of the pitfalls, though? Because there are some, aren't there? So have you got any ways of sort of managing somebody. I mean, normally you would have a probation period.
Yeah.
Would you just carry on exactly the same with your current, let's assume you have these procedures in place, would you just carry on the same or would you put in new ones? For taking on somebody who may be a little bit different.
I think you would probably benefit by sort of looking at the structure of your organisation and looking at how inclusive your organisation is. And so are you making allowances for people, say, with neurodiverse conditions, so like autism and ADHD? If you've got somebody from, say, a particularly religious background that needs to go and pray, is there a space for that? So is the culture of your organisation inclusive to all of those people? So can they fit in if they were given the chance, or are you sort of
rigid?
Are you by default excluding them even if you didn't mean to? So I think that would be the sort of the first place to look. But in terms of following procedures, in terms of probation, and if somebody was underperforming, then that would be the same rule for everybody. And I think that's what we're trying to say here, is that actually we're not making allowances to encourage people that are not good at the job. We want everybody to be good at the job, and we want to be able to welcome as many people as possible to the workplace from as diverse background as possible, but they still have to be able to do the job. But you're just creating the environment in which they can do that.
I think that's just a super message. So nothing really has to change. These are procedures that you should already have in place. Yeah. Mm. You don't need to bring anything special in. You just need to make sure that what you've got actually is suitable for the general job of recruitment, retention, training,
performance management.
Mm. You don't need anything special, but you do need a system, because everybody needs a system if you employ somebody.
Yeah. And as a leader, you'd want to encourage an inclusive culture with your other members of staff as well.
Mm. Let's come back, if we can, because I do like to dot around all over the place, to some of the perhaps issues around setting up, I'm going to get it wrong, community interest, not-for-profit, social enterprise, charity. Are there any things that you perhaps need to take into consideration which might actually swerve you off in a different direction?
I think it's about thinking about why you're doing your reason why, that asking yourself why you're doing it. And then if it's all about the money and getting as much profit as you possibly can. I say profit isn't a dirty word, and then contradict myself, but if that's the main sole purpose of why you're doing your business, then this sector isn't for you. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a different kind of approach, really. So I guess in terms of the things that you need to think about when you're setting up a social enterprise or a charity, is there a need for it? In that area, are there other people that are already doing it?
Just because you've decided that you think it's a good idea doesn't necessarily mean that it is.
No, and we talk a lot about at Social Enterprise Kent about working with people rather than doing to, and it's a really different approach. It's not top down. It's not, we will come in and we will try and fix you because you're wrong.
You're broken.
Yeah, you're broken. But it's about saying, okay, so this community or this individual needs support. How can we support that person? But actually asking that person or that community how they want to be supported, rather than, you know, us coming in and assuming that, which is a common problem that a lot of people have. Mm.
So, yes, you're not doing stuff to people.
Yeah. Yeah, so having that need, checking out if there are other kind of organisations already doing it. So could you just maybe add value to what they're doing? Because, you know, it's wrong to assume that there's not competition within the charitable sector. There is. We try and work with each other as much as we possibly can, and there's a lot of great partnerships out there. But there's no use. Say there's a food bank in a certain area and you think, I'm going to start a food bank.
And you think they need one with the dookie beans.
Yeah, exactly. Or something. I mean, and that's another situation entirely, because we keep talking, I'm off on a tangent now, Sian, but we're talking about social supermarkets rather than food banks these days, and having that empowering of people. So when in a social supermarket, you go in and you pay for the goods, it's just a much reduced
it's
rate.
A different...
Yeah, rather than... and there's nothing wrong with food banks. People need them a lot at the moment, but there's a place for them.
There's just one thing I want to just sort of suggest... very, very quickly, because we haven't got a lot of time, is that if you're thinking of setting up a social enterprise or a community interest company or a not-for-profit, it does, you don't, that isn't what you have to do exclusively. So you could have another business.
Absolutely.
And set up alongside it to help a particular sector. It could be related to the business that you already have. A not-for-profit which taps in a different way and supports a different group of people within, you know, sort of just to the side of your existing business. So you don't have to go all in. It's something that you can do alongside, isn't it?
Yeah, actually that's how a lot of people start. Mm. So they sometimes use their private limited company to finance their social enterprise. So they might say to a certain client, well, I'm going to charge you £100 an hour, but actually, just so you know, that your £100 an hour is contributing to my social enterprise. So there's a bit of a, it's not that corporate social responsibility.
So there isn't this real sort of, you could do one or the other. You can actually have, absolutely, you can actually have a mix of companies and a mix of legal entities and a mix of approaches offering what may look to be actually quite a similar service. I just want to bring Adele in. Did you want to say something?
Absolutely. I didn't know
if you were just enthusiastically agreeing.
I am, because I am in that situation at the moment. So I've got the CIC paper here, I've got my limited company, and I've worked out that my limited company is going to help fund. So for me, I've taken more notes than ever, because I'm in that, and I've asked that question, how do I do that? Mm. So as profit can be an issue, too much passion can. So the point I was going to make was, I had so much passion, I thought I knew the problem, so I ran a focus group with the women I was going to help with, and actually they put some perspective. So as profit can be a challenge, too much passion can as well. Mm. And then they grounded me, and I now know the problem I'm trying to fix.
Yes, I know somebody else who might have had that problem as well. But you can, yes, you can get too enthusiastic about giving too much stuff away and trying to help everybody without the right support.
Yeah.
But you can have a community interest company, you can have a not-for-profit running alongside a profitable business. They do not have to be. They're mutually exclusive entities, but you can still be running them as a complete objective. Did that actually make any sense at all?
That's just what I'm stepping into. So right, thank you, ladies.
Okay. I tell you what, I think we haven't got long. Rebecca,
yes.
How can people get hold of you?
The best way to is through our website, so www.sekgroup.org.uk, or an email address is support@sekgroup.org.uk. All the socials, we're on at Social Enterprise Ken. If you search for us, we're all there.
We'll be sending stuff out. It's all right. Rebecca Smith from Social Enterprise Ken and Jess Bartendale, also from Social Enterprise Ken, thank you so much for coming in and sharing all of your knowledge and experience. And thank you so much for also supporting the Women in Business Big Show and speaking at that and talking about what are you talking about?
Business with a heart.
You'd think I'd know, wouldn't you? Adele and I will be back next week. Yes. We've got no idea what we're doing. but we will be back. We will see you all then. Thank you so much, everybody. Bye.
Tune in next week to the Women in Business radio show for more stories, ideas, and inspiration to help you grow your business.